The search for meaning and an authentic mode of existence had led him to wander the existent spiritual organizations which for him held out promise for the redemption of the soul from this fallen world of the Kali Yuga or Iron Age, which he conceived to be the current age in which we live. Accordingly, he had been involved in Masonry, Advaita Vedanta and then Islam in his search for an authentic path reflective of the tradition, of which there can only be one and which he affirms to be universal, accessible to all without regard to one's race. He erred in this judgment, which was the basis of what might be called the inauthentic and counter-traditional path he followed in life, though it is fair to assume he, being Aryan, derived partial truth along his journey and perhaps even, through the brambles of the spiritual formations he followed and adhered to, arrived at truth. His fallacy or error was that of the typical Westerner, and specifically of an Aryan who had fallen for the deception of the universalist fallacy, namely that all people could share in a common tradition and that what was alleged to be a tradition was in fact that and not a mere counterfeit. The error he made lies in the fact that only one tradition exists, that of the Hyperborean, and that only Aryans are capable of following this path in spirit and in truth, and that, though other non-Aryans may attain some understanding of truth, they can, by virtue of their ontological structure, their genetico-spiritual constitution, never attain an adequate comprehension of truth, let alone rediscover or follow the tradition which is not theirs but the exclusive property of Aryan mankind. They may adhere to it and attempt to follow it, but they can never attain it in any fully comprehensive manner. Hence Ganon's error of the universalist fallacy led him to fall into what Julius Evola called the crepuscular remnants of the tradition, into the distorted and modified forms of primordial Aryan gnosis which had been modified of necessity through the consciousness of the non-Aryans in their current particular areas. The non-Aryans had received the earlier presence of the Aryan race prior to that point, and which, through interbreeding and war, had led to the disintegration of the tradition and its bearers, the Aryan race. The Aryans had left their cultural and genetico-spiritual remains amongst the natives or non-Aryan invaders, who then took up whatever cultural product was created by their Aryan forebears and transmuted it into a product made in their own image, a crepuscular remnant. Hence all the currently existent spiritual formations are largely a syncretic amalgam, a resultant product of the distortion process of miscegenation. This is the fact of history overlooked or deliberately ignored by such as Ganon, who assume or affirm the legitimacy of the crepuscular remnants. It may also be called the ex-Orient Lux fallacy, where the so-called Eastern spiritual forms are affirmed to be authentic expressions of the primordial tradition and the consciousness of Aryan mankind, when they are not but a miscegenated product from which perhaps only dull glowing coals may be salvaged, but in no way any Promethean torch of the Luciferian light of the north. This may be derived only from the authentic Aryan orders which exist in regions unknown to the writer but surely exist and have existed in an uninterrupted form throughout world history. The Third Reich was a last visible expression of the tradition made manifest to the consciousness of the authentic bearers of the torch of the northern light of Hyperborean truth. Ganon's notion of tradition inhering in all currently existent religions hence may only be true in a partial sense, and no current religions can be spoken of as authentic, merely syncretic distortions. They are also inventions, perhaps not entirely of the dark forces but in large part, invented as slave religions of mind control to reduce the population to the level of slavish obedience within the context of an initiatic hierarchy ruled over by themselves, the black magicians of Zion. Though Ganon contemptuously refers to the counter-tradition existing at his time during the early decades of the 20th century, he himself adhered to a counter-tradition, though perhaps of a more restrictive and Saturnian variety, that having been Advaita Vedanta and later Islam, both of which are, as far as a writer can understand, restrictive and overly limited forms of rule-based dogma. Perhaps Ganon had gone beyond good and evil, having been an initiate of the highest order and thus was no longer bound by the rules and limitations of these creeds as those of the laity. If so, and it is reasonable to conclude that this is true based upon the conception of an initiatic hierarchy he spoke of in spiritual authority and temporal power, then he may have been right for his own purposes to have pursued the paths he did. However, through the exoteric form of tradition and its esoteric inner form, the latter being accessible only to those deemed qualified by this spiritual authority may be valid as a general conception that it was pursued within the context of a pseudo-tradition. He was not able to affirm that his path was valid. Being a Frenchman and thus partially mixed, he thus observed reality through a glass darkly and, operating on the basis of this error, wound up where he was in the context of a counter-initiation. He rolled with the punches of the Kali Yuga amidst the ruins of modernity, amidst a miscegenated and degraded genetico-spiritual essence he himself had incarnated in within the context of his degraded French society and the sum total of eonic and material conditions of the Kali Yuga which obtained at that conjuncture and have only worsened since that time. Gainon was in many cases the product of his time, miscegenated, having had a Catholic upbringing, having been immersed in science, especially mathematics, a modernist system of conceptual abstractions related to the material or phenomenal plane alone, and his immersion, given both influences, in Thomistic scholasticism properly critiqued in Julius Evola's scholasticism and the spirit of modernity as a result of the modernist formation of profane philosophy. Though Gainon acknowledged this form of understanding of reality was distorted by this influence, leading him to dwell in the conceptual world of the universal over much in the notional sense of nominalism over that of Platonic realism. Though he may have believed his understanding confined itself strictly to the Platonic one of pure intellection, and represented in the form of medieval scholasticism at a later period and which he himself represented and applied to Eastern spirituality, clothing the pseudo-traditions of the East in the form of humanal to human abstractions of the quintessence. Given that not all paths lead to God, his universalist error missed the point of the necessary reality of particularity of the concrete organic forms of culture soul. These organic forms mediate the given of reality and articulate it in their own image and are not authentic paths but mere syncretic dogma and narrative formations in particular times and places adhered to by various and sundry beings with a distinct culture soul. Hence there is no universal applicability in any linguistic or symbolic form. Gainon ignored the most fundamental reality, that of the myth of the blood, in his slavish devotion to the universal of scholasticism and indeed of modernity itself, and hence failed to understand organic reality as the basis of the manifestation of the sum total of being or absolute supreme being, affirming through his actions and words that a white European man from France could travel to India or to Egypt and seamlessly blend in with a culture soul completely foreign to his own. This was an action undergone on the basis of his universalist error, presumably derived from his Catholic upbringing and thus a symptom of modernity itself, that same conjuncture or epoch he condemned and purported to find transcendence over in his critique thereof propounded in The Crisis of the Modern World and The Reign of Quantity and the Signs of the Times. Gainon clung to the universalist fallacy and then found a space for himself within the confines of the Saturnian prison of Abrahamic dogma, the same dogma he had been raised in only in an even more distorted and inauthentic form of Arabized Islam. He may have found truth as a Sufi, but he fell into a path of Saturnian rigidity, of dogma, which was the substance of this pseudo-tradition. Perhaps it was even a more authentic form of spiritual being for Gainon than Judaized Christianity, the writer can't say, having had no Gnostic experience in either pseudo-tradition and product of modernity, of the Kali Yuga. Gainon spoke of fissures in the wall that were opened up and created by what he called the counter-tradition, the wall of tradition as he understood it being a form of spiritual life protective of the people who were confined within its alleged comforting and secure walls. However, these walls simply closed off the mind and soul of the adherent to spiritual reality, trapping them within and crystallizing their consciousness. Hence the fissures in the wall created by what he called the counter-tradition, which was largely the Aufklärung or Enlightenment, and subsequent forms of spirituality may have been, if not entirely, then in part a boon to crack the rigid carapace of the walls of the leaden tomb of Abrahamic religion and its related variants, which, in Gnostic terms, entailed the veneration of the demiurge or inferior deity, and in those of Miguel Serrano, the plagiarist of the higher planes called God by the Judeo-Christians and Brahma by the Hindus. Thus, given that Abrahamic religion is a product of the Kali Yuga, of modernity properly so called, and is a limited dogmatic and crystallized product of the consciousness of Jewry, to affirm that anything Abrahamic could ever be a tradition is an absurdity, as it is simply a Semitic syncretism, an artificial plagiaristic concoction of Jewish theocratic praxis impose upon their goyim slave caste as a means of achieving their despotism. All paths lead to God, that is to say, all Semitic syncretisms lead one into a merger with the consciousness of the demiurge and lead to the extinction of one's soul, serving them up as soul food for the cosmic vampire. The books Exposing Christianity and Exposing Islam by Joy of Satan Ministries detail the corruption and fallacy of Abrahamic, demiurgic religions, which are easily proven to be syncretic distortions of previously existent syncretic distortions. Works such as The Great Jewish Mask and Jesus Never Existed further underscore the fallacy of the Abrahamic's claim to being an authentic tradition. Thus, the only conclusion to be drawn is that Abrahamic religion is itself a counter-tradition, a pseudo-tradition of inauthenticity, laboring under the universalist fallacy, and thus gain on as a representative of what became known as the traditionalist school, followed an inauthentic path. Perhaps he managed to find some redeemable elements along his path of Advaita Vedanta and Sufism under the robe of Islamic dogma, but that he was forced to ride the tiger of modernity amidst the ruins of the tradition, and the concrete mixture of those ruins into the Abrahamic temples and mosques shows clearly that his path was not traditional at all, but at best a Gnostic experience in the mode of the counter-tradition. Theosophy and its New Age variants gain on castigated in his acerbic attempts at refuting them, Theosophy, History of a Pseudo-Tradition and the Spiritist Fallacy. He attempted to refute these creeds mainly through a contemptuous gossip regarding the personal life of H.P. Blavatsky and others, and not so much addressing the actual conceptions of theosophy such as reincarnation and the notion of soul progress, etc. He attempted to stigmatize them with the label counter-tradition, meaning a distortion of spiritual truth which he affirmed was only available in the existent mainstream religions, and thus aforesaid revealed his own spiritist fallacy and affirmed the history of his own pseudo-tradition but not his adopted religion. Theosophy was somewhat better critiqued by Julius Evola in his work The Mask and Face of Contemporary Spiritualism, but even in this work he did not address its specific claims other than reincarnation, which he critiqued better elsewhere in his article Karma and Reincarnation. Theosophy, as well as most New Age philosophy, could properly be spoken of as counter-tradition in the sense of being, 1, universalist in large part and not specifically related to the polar Hyperborean tradition, which is the only legitimate tradition, 2, it's affirming ideas which could never be consistent with that tradition, a, reincarnation in progressive, evolutionary cycles as opposed to the Hyperborean conception of Devic involution and resurrection of the immortals, b, the conception of rounds and chains and planetary hopping with souls going as groups to the next planet in a predetermined sequence based upon evolutionary cycles determined by the breath of Brahma and the cycles of time as reflected in the zodiacal constellations, the possible funding of such conceptions and its ideologues in general by the sinister forces of the demiurge as a means of facilitating the genocide of the Aryan Viryas, who alone can prevent their despotism, through deceiving them into thinking that serving their evolutionist agenda would gain them a ticket to a paradise on another planet, be it Venus or Mercury, etc. Though Theosophy is, the writer acknowledges, a pseudo-tradition and a counter-initiation, it nonetheless contains redeemable elements as regards cosmogenesis and anthropogenesis, the theory of colors, the astrological correspondences, etc. Though such traditionalists as Gainon would contend that astrology is false on the basis of the alleged shifting of the constellations, even according to his own distorted Hindu conception of cosmology, the cycles of time entail a relative stability of the stars as their energies impinge upon the earth, which is corroborated in the partial truth of the counter-initiatic work Esoteric Astrology by Alice Bailey. Gainon's snide arrogance presumably derives from his Abrahamic upbringing and his mathematical education, which, as Hegel referred to math, the evidence of defective cognition, of which mathematics is proud and with which it also boasts against philosophy, is based solely on the poverty of its purpose and the inadequacy of its material, and is therefore of a kind that philosophy must despise. The real is not spatial as it is considered in mathematics, neither concrete sensuous perception nor philosophy bother with such unreality as the things of mathematics are. The vainglory of Gainon is characteristic of the counter-tradition of Abrahamism, the Kali Yuga, and specifically the Piscean Age's pseudo-traditions concocted by Jewry that Gainon had fallen into. Perhaps Ganon recognized this and simply rolled with the punches as he rode the tiger of modernity, following this spiritual path and found within the shell of its dogma the kernel of its partial truth to furnish himself with what little spiritual dried meat he might discover in the nadir of the Kali Yuga. That he formed the Masonic Lodge called the Great Triad based upon his book of the same name affirming the universality of the Trinitarian metaphysical conception reveals his attempts perhaps to salvage the arcane tradition of Hyperborean, though doing so under the weight of the burden of the universalist fallacy. His work The Veil of Isis, which may not have been his work but a compilation of his articles, further illuminates his schismatic and antagonistic relationship with the Aryan tradition in his discussion of Aryans from such regions as the Gobi Desert civilization as the Red Race, connoting the rubedo phase of Hermetic alchemy, that of the full integration of the soul, and attempting to either, 1, portray Aryans as the exclusive bearers of this property, the carriers of the tradition in the blood, or at least of those most significantly poised to bear the Promethean torch, else simply a concept or universal principle of the Red Race being incorporative of just anyone regardless of genetico-spiritual race in the biologistic sense. This is difficult to say. 2, or to accommodate non-Aryans into his attempt to reformulate a pseudo-tradition. Ganon had referred to the counter-initiation incorporating the New Age elements which were largely constructed by Jewry such as Anthroposophy and its founder, the Jew Rudolf Steiner, and referring to C.W. Leadbeater's pedophilia case amongst other signs of his disagreement with Jewry, referring to them as the most Western race in a cold sense of Western. Though Ganon also praised the Hebrew Kabbalah as an authentic tradition. Perhaps she had to for political reasons, or perhaps he was insinuating that Hebrew Kabbalah wasn't entirely Jewish or not Jewish, but that the Hebrews were another race, possibly even white? This seems a dubious claim, however. That Ganon was subjected to a black magic assault in Cairo by a Jew who had wanted to obtain a photograph of him for black magic purposes suggests that Ganon was not anything but an opponent of theirs. The Abrahamic influence which exerted its influence on his mind had set him up from birth to fall into the trap of the Semitic syncretism of the Abrahamic counter-tradition. Perhaps also what rendered him susceptible to this counter-tradition was his mixed blood, which has been to a slight degree Arabized through having been raised in a cosmopolitan environment just outside of Paris and having been subject to the influence of the demi-monde culture of the Judaized France of the fin de siècle period during his developmental years and its chaotic culture soul. Thus he was dragged down into the counter-tradition of scholasticism, and the science of formal quantity and his Catholic upbringing. Though he attempted to break free of its bonds by pursuing a course in the East, his westernized soul was hung up on the formalism and letter of the laws of the phenomenal plane realm of the demiurge, leading back by profane philosophy into Islam, into a relationship with a sheikh, his daughter, and in a miscegenated union of souls so characteristically modern. Though as Titus Burkhart, a follower of Ganon, had spoken of in his article on Julius Evola's Ride the Tiger, Gnosis and authentic initiation operates best under historically proven conditions, what he mistakenly identified as tradition within Islam. Tradition does not exist in religion, which latter is simply a mind control formula for slavery, keeping the flock under the shepherd's crook of the priests of the order of Melchizedek, and this owing to its universalist fallacy and Semitic syncretism. Thus mainstream religion is not compatible with tradition, but is at most a conduit into remnants of the tradition, and could never be a tradition itself, but is the inverse, a counter-tradition in the proper sense. This counter-tradition leads away from the immortalization of the soul that can only be obtained through the proper exercises either in a group or individual setting, following the teachings of those truly spoken of as wise and reflective of the Hyperborean tradition, figures such as Julius Evola and Miguel Serrano, both of whom rejected the universalist fallacy as well as the Semitic syncretism of the Kali Yuga. Ruins of tradition in today's world. There is much discussion of East versus West, with the West presented as something undesirable or inherently bad or wrong, and the East as something inherently good or desirable. In occult terms, the West connotes materialization, the concretization of the idea or of higher forms of being, and the Eastern etherealization or spiritualization of material life. Within the waning of the Kali Yuga, the good of spirit is posited over and against the evil of matter. Such a Piscean Age dualistic conception is fallacious indeed, as neither evil nor good in the sense of magic and morality bears any correlation to reality save relatively, in relation to the limited consciousness of the mortals dwelling within this epoch. As one can infer based upon experience and the social changes being deliberately introduced, the world of modernity, that is to say the world of today, is undergoing a process of restructuring, a revaluation of all values, transforming and intended to be transmuted into a synthesis of East and West, best represented in the symbol of the equal armed cross, where the horizontal bar of the cross represents matter or the material plane, and a vertical representing spirit and all that which exists at a higher frequency above matter, more subtle forms of being. They who are the architects of the world are endeavoring to synthesize together spirit and matter, and this in the coarsest of terms through a mass importation of different ethnic groups uprooted from their own countries through incentive and through the coercion of engineered circumstances. Thus the Kalergi plan for the creation of a Eurasian population reminiscent of the Nilotic Negro of Egypt is their intended protocol. It is a crudely materialistic endeavor to unify opposites, to crucify the God-man of Balder on the cross of matter in the person of a Jewish man who never existed, a defilement of the Hyperborean tradition and the Aryan race through a religion of mongrelization. Rather than an organic reconciliation of opposites, there is instead a desire to perversely syncretize organically distinct groups into an amalgam of cultural nothingness, eliminating spirit from this world through submerging it into the mire of matter and coarse materiality. Thus an act of black magic is being undergone through the political alchemy of the world order, a deliberate defilement of organic difference, however distorted and perverted it may already be through the historical process of miscegenation and the correlative formation of syncretic cultural amalgams which constitute the cultures currently existent. Whether the pendulum swings in favor of the globalist agenda or against, for the preservation of harmony and organic development of the currently existing groups on Earth, is not easy to predict. Rather than venturing predictions, only prudent courses of action can be prescribed, and only the prudent will follow their course towards this ideal of the affirmation of organic difference. Those who side with the globalists and work toward the reification of their perverse ideas will receive their reward in this life or in the next, or both, according to the laws of karma. East and West being states of being emphasized to greater and lesser degrees in diverse populations, the globalists seek a reconciliation of opposites of those diverse races or species that achieve in their mind a reconciliation according to their analysis and evaluation of the inherent traits of these diverse groups. These groups express in their behavior, culture and physiognomy, and reflecting at higher levels the planetary archons and their traits. The Jews are Saturnian in their temperament, and possibly even, should it be believed according to the claims of some such as Blavatsky, derived from Saturn. Perhaps as Trample on Snakes, a media channel has claimed, Neanderthals were manufactured on Saturn and transferred via wormholes to the Earth to constitute its population for the soul-harvesting machine run by the extraterrestrial cabal on Saturn who have taken over this planetary archon. They were then subsequently mixed, perhaps as others have claimed, with reptilian transdimensionals. Perhaps their souls simply derive from that planet by some other means? Regardless, they resonate with Saturnian energy, and their religion is devoted to Saturn worship, is in fact Saturnian astro-theology. The Jews being Saturnian and resonating with this planet are paired off with the usurper of Saturn's rulership, Jupiter, and they who are claimed to have an association therewith, namely whites, whose imposed religion of Christianity expresses their Jupiterian traits of expansion and spirit preponderating over matter, which trait is inherent in the symbol of Jupiter with the crescent of soul over the cross of matter, the antipode of Saturn with its cross of matter over spirit. Thus a reconciliation is perhaps intended through a mixture of the two races in spite of all inner antagonism, and this would undoubtedly have been Jewry's plan in the beginning, as their plans have historically favored them to intermix with Aryans to the advantage of Jewry and to the disadvantage of the Aryans. The Arabs are of a Venusian nature, and their religion is of this character. Accordingly, they are also intended to be added to the Venusian coupling seems most pragmatically advantageous to the cabal of black magicians in their geopolitical alchemy. Given that the Arabs are hybrids with every primordial race, they are thus a universal ingredient added to the melted pot of stew for the cloaca gentium of modernity. The Chinese are the outline from the Far East and its lunar light of Oriental mysticism, which the Cabal wishes to incorporate as a yin element into their estimation over the yang matrix of Western civilization, thus achieving a reconciliation of types through the miscegenation process of erasure of organic difference, creating the Kalergi kid of the Eurasian type, part Asiatic Mongol, part Europoid Caucasoid, the best of both worlds of East and West. What is not recognized, or simply what is overlooked, is that such a reconciliation of difference to a state of identity eliminates the dynamic tension which elevates the consciousness of all. By collapsing the distinction of East and West into a global monoculture, a syncretic byproduct has been achieved, and from out of this inertia rather than the tension of development. Unless that is the globalist intention, as embodied in their multipolar theory of one of their ideologues, Alexander Dugin, is to preserve a remnant of diverse races or species and simply blend whites out of existence through mass migration while taking for themselves the lion's share of the blood of Aryan mankind and assimilating it into themselves. Perhaps they would, as in the case of South Africa, keep whites around, demoting them to the level of plantation serfs, be they white or blue-collar workers, a persecuted and disempowered minority used as chattel slave labor to maintain the machine of Zion. This has been done to a large extent in the Soviet Union before, though the population had been inadequately white or inadequately developed in terms of infrastructure to establish a sustainable society. Regardless of motives, this was the fate of the whites who were not resistive and subject to overt slaughter by the Jewish revolutionary Bolsheviks and their hordes of proletarian Untermenschen. In conclusion, it seems likely that this latter protocol is that of Jewry, who has debased whites to the level of a Uyghur, either in the secular mode of a drugged and sexed out secular, or in the Christian or New Age mode of inebriated consciousness, a mind polluted with the sugar-sweet tinctures of pacifistic egalitarian ideology. So much for the plans and intentions of the globalists. The reality and the fantasy does not always coincide, and for this reason their plans may very well blow up in the faces of these engineers of destruction. The true history of the world is that of a fall from grace. The cause of miscegenation and the cause of this deliberate involution onto the earth of the beings referred to as Vanir in the Edda, or Devas in the Vedas, mixing their blood with the Neanderthal and other anthropoids who existed on the earth in primordial times, dwelling within the reincarnation trap of the Matrix, engineered by the reptilian aliens who are the creators of they who call themselves Jews today. From this point, the ancient cultures of Atlantis and Lemuria were formed and were the locations of the ancient wisdom of these higher beings who trafficked with the Aryans and maintained a caste system based upon the principle of Vanashrama Dharma. The sacred science of these now sunken continents was preserved to a degree, though presumably lost during the catastrophes which saw the destruction of these regions of the earth. Radiating outward from Atlantis and Lemuria prior to these catastrophes, however, were colonies that were established over the entire globe. The colonies were populated by Aryans of the purest variety. Closest in appearance to the Devasti were the blonde-haired and blue-eyed people who still to this day constitute the archetype of Aryan mankind. In South America they were referred to as Quetzalcoatl in their cities of Tiahuanaco, Machu Picchu, and on Easter Island, upon which they created statues resembling themselves and looking out over the boundless ocean toward Lemuria. In North America they were called Huitzilopochtli and built the city of Tenochtitlan and others now buried and destroyed today through the violent fanaticism of the conquistadors who later arrived under the influence of Christopher Columbus. This was discussed by Miguel Serrano in his book Adolf Hitler, The Last Avatar, regarding the slaughter of the white gods. Serrano's booklet We Will Not Celebrate the Death of the White Gods is yet another elaboration of the history of the Americas and the presence of the Aryan Atlantean immigrants. The book Vinlanders by 55 Club Books is yet another source for copious details of the migration of whites to the Americas, establishing through archaeological evidence the presence of Aryans throughout the entirety of the Americas paleohistorically. The Americas later came to be overrun by Mongols from Siberia, who came over the land bridge and who subjected the Aryan population to mass murder. Though almost certainly there existed the phenomenon of interbreeding at certain points and in exceptional cases. One might conjecture that the presence of Jews in the Americas, their origins shrouded in the mists of time, preceded that of the Jew Christopher Columbus, and that they underwent the same intrigue they always do, infiltrating and ingratiating themselves with the Aryans, and if they have had any non-Aryans in their community, inciting them to revolution, the murder of the white population. Mormonism also speaks of this, with the whites or Nephites being a presence in the Americas and having been slaughtered by the Mongoloids, and later the founder of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, stating that whites would create a new Jerusalem in the Americas. Later Mormon doctrine became corrupted and transformed into a Judeo-Christian Masonic sect accommodative of all and sundry of the mixed multitude. The tradition of the Atlanteans, the polar hyperborean gnosis of the demigod Aryans transmitted by the gods, became corrupted and distorted through this means, through the crucible of miscegenation and genocidal assault, and what was preserved of it was to become a distortion of the original, what Julius Avola called a crepuscular remnant of the tradition, a dying spark of the primordial light of the North. Atlantean colonists left the North prior to the catastrophe and migrated toward the now Gobi Desert, which was in its origin, prior to the perpetuation of the cosmic war in that region and the nuclear explosions which transformed it into a desert, a series of lakes. Within this region, what was called, according to René Guénon, Pear Land, the Atlantean civilization continued, and cities with a presence underground were constructed, and pyramids developed which served as implosive power generators and which were subject to the devastation of a nuclear war instigated by the dark forces. The culture of this region, its tradition, has been in the most literal sense buried in the sands of time by the legions of the Demiurge and their violent aggressive expansion and fanatical desire to enslave the population to their will. Thus, nothing can be said on this topic by the writer who is not aware of any evidence regarding the culture of the Gobi. However, the still alive religion of Tibetan Bonpo might hold a clue to this ancient tradition, as it almost certainly derived therefrom. That Lhasa is situated over the underground city of Agartha may indicate that the ancient culture of Atlantis and perhaps also Lemuria is alive and breathing under the veneer of Buddhism in its Vajrayana form, as alluded to by Robert E. Dickhoff in his book Agartha. The underground network of cities he speaks of connecting Agartha and Shambhala and the remnants of Lemuria in New Schwabenland exist to this day and is the vestige of the primordial civilization that is continued from the origin and managed to find safety away from the dark forces in the hollow earth and its underground cities, illuminated by the light of the central sun. The region of the earth now called Turkey was the site of an ancient civilization whose memory had become tainted and which city was destroyed and buried in rubble owing to the atrocities which legend has it therein occurred. These atrocities had been perpetuated in the American region also by Jews as well as in Ireland through their infiltration by the Aztec and Druidic priest caste respectively. The Jews introduced their vile rites of sacrifice and brought low civilization through this means. One might presume the Aryan remnant destroyed the civilization now called Çatalhöyük and eventually built nearby civilizations in Sumer and Persia. Sumer in particular, as its statues and culture bear witness to, was an Aryan culture. The blue-eyed statues with their snub noses and bow lips testifying to the Aryan stock. From this point on, simultaneously, after the disaster which occurred on Atlantis, Egypt was colonized, the land they called Chem meaning the black land, referring to the black soil of the Nile Delta. This term black, like the Chinese Yang, refers to they who are keepers of the black flame of the black sun, the gnosis of Hyperborea. The Sumerians also, it should be noted, were referred to as the black heads. The early wall paintings of Egypt clearly depict blonde-haired Aryans in positions of power, as Arthur Kemp's book The Children of Ra reveals. The ancient Egyptian culture and civilization is one of the most well-documented and known traditional remnants of Atlantis. However, it is a remnant alone and has only some slight value in representing that tradition owing to the mixture between the Aryans and indigenous stock who dwelt in this region prior to their arrival. The miscegenation which occurred, one might conjecture, occurred fairly soon after their arrival within the first few hundred years, and the subsequent invasion of the Semitic Hyksos further dealt a blow to the integrity of the original culture and race of the population who were subject to the intrusion of the serpent seed and their despotic influence. Once the Aryan population liberated themselves from the yoke of Akhenaten and his mono-idolatry, they were left the smaller minority and largely mixed to an irredeemable degree with the Nilotic Negroes, as Kalergi called them, forming a population that atrophied, taking the tradition with them, leaving mere remnants behind in wall paintings and architecture, in papyri and sarcophagi. The curse of the mummy was upon the Aryan population, who degraded to nothing in the cloaca gentium of the Nile. Thus the Egyptian culture and religion, save perhaps for the earliest, is that of Nilotic Negroes and is in no way Aryan practice. A simple example lies in the cremation of the deceased, which is a presence in all Aryan culture, contrasted with the excessive focus on funerary rites in Egypt during most of its history, as articulated in the Book of the Dead. The origins of such practices may have been Lemuria under the beast men of that region, who had migrated to the Nile Delta and North African region millennia before. In the Far East, the Gobi Desert radiated outward into modern Mongolia, Tibet, China, and other areas of the earth. The book by the Iranian Aliolia Body Zen and Martial Arts illustrates the migration of the Aryan as inferable from the ancient mummies in the region and similarity of artifacts and iconography. The culture of the Orient is thus a repository of ancient Atlantean gnosis, only buried under the tangled genetico-spiritual mass of Mongoloid admixture with whom the Aryan had mixed, combining culture and blood into a mixture of disparate elements which constitute the ruins of tradition conventionally called Eastern, that so many foolish whites in Western, degraded Judeo-Christian liberal culture have associated with the primordial culture, in the case of Christians considering it bad or evil and liberals as good. The I Ching was translated by Ezra Pound, who was a supporter of the Italian fascist regime and who was institutionalized after the Second World War in his own country of America, of which he was the foremost poet owing to this support. Having been a Neoplatonist, he was influenced perhaps unduly by the Near Eastern conceptions of the One. However, the One Being not being equivalent to the God of Judeo-Christianity might constitute some salvation for his translation and indicate an intuitive understanding of origins. The Confucius religion, or code of ethics and moral philosophy, which serves as a common people's ethical template, was a Mongoloid addition to the secret teaching of the I Ching, which was in its origin an Aryan work of magical practice and metaphysical principles. That the Chinese hexagram system is correspondent with the Nordic runes, each rune in its shape fitting into the matrix of the hexagram, suggests Hyperborean origins. The hexagram formation on the north pole of Saturn connotes a Saturnian correspondence, or perhaps derivation of both runes and hexagrams, and the golden age when Saturn was a major sun of the solar system. The Shiva Yantram, or six-pointed star, also fits into the hexagram and was stolen by Jewry as their own symbol under the Rothschilds, replacing their menorah. This ancient Vedic symbol also had its origins in Atlantis. The Vedic culture derived perhaps from the Gobi Desert, just as did Tibet. The Gobi Desert civilization was the center from out of which radiated its offshoots, carrying the remnants of the Aryan race to China, eventually to Japan and to the Indian subcontinent, bringing with it perhaps the Ajiveda and earliest of the yet surviving Tantras and Vedas, which constitute the original nucleus of Aryan lore in this region. The Sanskrit language, akin to modern German, was maintained in spite of the regression and indeed the rotting of the caste system, with the principle of Varna becoming supplanted with a nebulous tradition that had incorporated into itself the brown Dravidians, who were remnants of the sunken continent of Lemuria. The Dravidian culture of Tellurism became mixed with that of the Aryans, creating a hybrid culture sustained with a tempestuous variability through the mixed stock which constituted the rot of what came to be called India's miscegenation. The subsequent religion of what the later British colonists called Hinduism was a combination of these two primordial spiritual paths, one of a Uranian and masculine, the other of a chthonic lunar nature, creating a chaotic amalgam of culture and race. Vaishnavism was the original distillate of the purity of caste which facilitated the mixture, leading to the downfall of India. Perhaps it may be speculated, The influence of Jury played a role in initiating this disintegrative process, inciting the Sudra caste of Dravidian Negroes to revolt, if only passively in their characteristically sullen nature, as did Gandhi at a later time to deal the death blow to the overt control of the British Empire in India. Miguel Serrano speaks of the presence of Bene Israel, the fifth caste of Jews in India, and their millennial historical presence there as usual playing the role of the corrupt Vaishya caste who built power through the usual modus operandi of subterranean subversion. The Bhagavad Gita, so venerated by Himmler at a later time, was a resultant product of this caste mixture and can only be spoken of as a book of partial truth, just as can any contemporary form of Indian culture, a distorted crepuscular remnant of original Vedic culture, marking the twilight phase of a people whose miscegenation has sounded their death knell, the spiritual exhaustion of blood poisoning. The final crepuscular remnants that manifested within the world historical cycle of the Manvantara are the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, the originary bacillus of ideological spiritual sickness, and its two offshoots, Christianity, which appeared at an equal interval of distance from its antecedent, to Islam, the final phase of Abrahamic manifestation. All three religions were syncretic creeds constructed through the historical process of cross-pollination, human contrivance, and the distortion of ancient Aryan culture and spirituality. The Jewish religion formed through the Babylonian attempted takeover, aka the captivity, and later in the Egyptian invasion of the Hyksos into the Nilotic Negro stronghold seeking territorial expansion and wealth through guile and cunning. The self-serving nature of Jewry spawned various fables and sundry parables that comprise the contemporary religion of Judaism, and which welded together the self-appointed chosen people throughout its wanderings, through the pathos of the victim complex and a fanatical monotheism, a characteristically Semitic lunar Saturnian spirituality. The comparatively weak tribal unit of Jewry employ their characteristically cunning nature to tear down the Aryan Roman Empire. One of their tactics entailed the insinuation of the thin ends of the spiritual wedges of the cross into the Imperium Romanum, starting with the introduction under Augustus of the mother goddess cults of the Near East, those of Cybele and Demeter, which the tolerant Roman emperors allowed pragmatically as a means of enabling their maintenance of empire. The Near Eastern spiritual incursions, which enabled through the incentives of mercantilism and the patrician caste's desire for profit, allowed the religion of martyrdom, the religion of the Chandala, of the slave, to encroach upon the territory of Rome and to eventually rot it out from within through revolution from below. From thence the Dark Age ensued after the destruction of the Library of Alexandria and the ongoing devastation of all non-Christian culture and spirituality, submerging the light of Aryan mankind into the darkness of dogmatic bigotry. Under the mantle of Christianism of the terror of the Catholic murder machine, the Hermetic tradition as spoken of by Julius Evola in his book of the same name was preserved. Some sects of Aryans, such as those of the Cathars and Bogomils, became tangled up with a Judaizer's form of Gnosticism, but preserved their tradition to a degree in spite of this fact. The still extant pre-Christian Aryan traditions were preserved for a time during the Piscean Age in more overt form, but quickly the Aryan learned that the only way he could preserve his ancestral tradition was through secrecy and covert means. From this unfortunate fact of the witch-hunting persecution of the Catholic Church, the Minnesänger and alchemists were born, who employed coded language and symbolism to preserve the tradition and carry it forward toward the coming Golden Age. René Guénon's book Freemasonry and the Companionage reveals glimmers of the Masonic history carrying forward the Hermetic tradition, as do Miguel Serrano's works The Golden Cord, Esoteric Hitlerism, and Adolf Hitler, The Last Avatar, tracing the history of the Luciferian tradition of the Aryan race. The Sufis derive their spiritual practices from Aryan Persia and other Aryan migrations through their region. Otto Rahn, a high-ranking SS officer, later represented this historical investigation in his work Lucifer's Court, which examined the history of the Cathars and revealed the persecutions of the Catholic Church against they who sought for freedom of thought and conscience, Gedankens und frei. Fleeing the persecution of the Catholic Church and going underground, the Aryan sought refuge in the Americas and elsewhere. In the Americas they became reacquainted with their ancestral brethren, the few who had not been slaughtered when they returned as the Vikings and later as the Protestants. In the latter case, however, they had become thoroughly Judaized and thus nearly bereft of the black flame of the black sun. The Mormons in their origin and other Protestant sects in America attempted, like many of their brethren in Europe, to preserve the Hermetic tradition within the lodge of Freemasonry. Somewhere along the line they became Judaized, however, with the infiltration of Jewry, transforming their rites and rituals to reflect the biblical stories. Perhaps this was a necessity for the Arians to avoid persecution by the mainstream Protestant and especially the monolithic Catholic Church, and thus to preserve their culture under the symbols and ritualism of the protagonists of the Bible, the Hebrews. Perhaps as some such as Herman Wieland revealed in his Atlantis, Edda and Bible, as well as Balder and Bible, and Jürgen Spanjuth, author of Atlantis, contended the original Hebrews were white. The name Hebrew, according to René Guénon in his work Symbols of Sacred Science, derives from the German word Eber, which refers to the boar, the ancient Hyperborean symbol that represents the constellation Arctus, whose Golden Age equivalent was the boar, also referred to as Gullinbursti, the boar accompanying the Aesir Freya. Hence can be seen the Luciferian tradition has Hyperborean origins, and perhaps buried within the Christian doctrine still the figure of the Atlantean Christ, Hyperborean Apollo, the Black Sunday, may be seen to shine amidst the ruins of tradition, reflecting the divine spark which will herald a new golden age with the Aryan race elevated to a higher form of spiritual being, the liberation of the Aeon Saturn from his rings of ice by the Christ ray emanating from the galactic center will elevate the vibrations of the earth and bring about a return to Hyperborea for the travelers who kept alive the light of Christos Lucifer Wotan, with Balder in Aquarius reigning supreme. Superhuman versus infrahuman. The contrast of types in the Kali Yuga admits of varying degrees between extremes, with most people occupying a position on the spectrum closer to the infrahuman than that of the superhuman. The downward pull of the Kali Yuga, what in Christian theology is called the end times, has rendered the majority of the population bestialized slaves to their transient, emotional states of consciousness, and has led them toward a path of self-destruction, becoming more bound to this chaotic state of being. Such people follow the path of entropy and lead themselves toward the grave through a dissipation of their higher self within the mire of samsara, their soul fragmenting and becoming absorbed into the maw of the demiurge and his minions who feed off their soul. One can thus easily see that the cabal of black magicians has a vested interest in keeping the mindless in a state of mindlessness and immersed in the moment, living a life of chaotic immanence like a rubber dinghy on the corrosive waters of the sulfuric acid of samsara, paddling 9 to 9, Monday to Sunday with frenzied exertion, else expiring before they can ever take a glance at land. Of course, such an impossible destination can never be arrived at through such coarsely materialistic means. The only means of transport leading toward this state is through flight, and that is available only to the superman, not the infrahuman, who is incapable of lifting his gaze to the stars above, fixated as it is on the hands of the clock with their rightward spin, and on the abstraction which is correlated with it by the black magicians, the almighty dollar, time being equivalent to money, and the infrahuman dwelling in time and not able, like the superhuman, the godman, to transcend time and live in eternity. The imposition of the necessity to chase the almighty dollar in time, in the 9 to 9 of the quotidian illusory false reality by the black magicians as a yoke upon their goyim, is the chain of mammon which coerces their slavery with its leaden weight, which they, being fools following the path of the fool off the cliff, perceive to be gold, as their masters have spray painted the links of lead with golden spray paint. These purblind fools drape the chain of their bondage around their neck as a signifier of their voluntary serfdom. Some aren't so lucky and have only leaden chains placed around them. At least they can perceive that they are enslaved and that the false promise of loot is just that. Of course, this is nothing to do with socioeconomic class. Indeed, those at lower levels are typically least able to perceive the color of their serfdom, understanding little more than the daily grind as their desirable lot in life, the necessary chafing of a yoke placed around their necks. Those part of the system, they who are the approved goyim service animals of the black magicians of Zion, are least aware of their bondage and most receptive thereto. Those least approved by the system, the true rebels against the dark forces, regardless of socioeconomic status, are most aware of the corrupting influence of money. However, the more money one has within the system, the higher the probability of their corruption, as the shit floats to the surface of the cloaca gentium, and only the corrupt are rewarded by the corrupt, being dirty birds of a feather. Hence the infrahuman occupies the throne within a society of infrahumanity, and the noble in the true sense of nobilitas has been cast down into the gutter with the riffraff who were not sufficiently clever or corrupt to float to the surface of the hierarchy of infrahumanity. That the hierarchy is that of black magicians evinces that those occupying high positions in a mundane sense are typically looked favorably upon by the black magicians if known, and thus are elevated to their lofty promontory whereon they may defecate their contempt and disdain of the broad masses who are posited beneath them in the hierarchy. Dirty birds and carrion fowl of humanity, such are the elders of Zion. These self-exalted beings are the servants of the black magicians as well as being within their ranks. They are the infrahuman who purport to be superhuman by occupying the heights of power and involving themselves in the vile rites of black magic in their synagogues and Masonic lodges. Beneath them are the useful idiot minions, the wannabes who play the role of their thugs, spies and workers in both white and blue color capacities. This hierarchy, though exalting its ego as supreme, a humble servant of the supreme being, is nonetheless of an infrahuman nature, not basing itself on truth and justice but rather upon hypocrisy and the simulacrum of justice, an unbalanced scale with a photograph of a balanced scale hanging from its apex. The black magician hypocrites of Zion are the modern Pharisees of our world, their hypocrisy being their defining trait, pretending to help while they hinder and to uphold justice while visiting injustice upon not only their enemies but themselves, and espousing truth as a veneer with which they cover their lies. The phrase whited sepulchre applies, and the black magician's Masonic temples as well as their synagogues and churches fit this description, the goods sold to the broad masses not matching the description. For the self-appointed Lucifers of the synagogue and lodge, their artful salesmanship has convinced themselves of their own grandeur and supreme nature as gods among men, while trafficking with infernal entities and winding up enslaved to their will, becoming vehicles of their sinister designs. They covet, as their Masonic and Jewish Kabbalistic jewelry reveals, the things of this world, just as much if not more than their Christian underlings, whose devotion to worldliness is observable in their devotion to the Almighty Dollar, thereby underscoring their hypocrisy. Any participant in the system partakes of the wine, not of Babylon, but of Jehovah, the blood of sacrifice, including their own sacrifice, as one must give their vital forces in order to receive energy, running a deficit as they race round in the rat wheel of their limited state condition of existence. Only the few can transcend this state of being and elevate themselves beyond the absurd cyclicity of their lives, a transparent pursuit of the abstraction called money and all its false gifts, as well as the abstraction called God and all of its false gifts, through earnest devotion and prayer. At least in the latter case the motive is often good, though the practice perverse as means don't correlate with the ends, owing to a life of devotion to the letter of the law and not the spirit, the practices entailed in such pseudo-spiritual exertions being a mere regurgitation of passages interpreted in a purely literal manner and a plaintive devotional supplication before the one God without any specific name or determinative nature of this God. The earthbound souls who think they are building stairways to heaven are in reality building them to hell, as each moment they spend in their demon hive churches, synagogues and Masonic lodges is yet another moment they have had contact with the hierarchy of entities that bind to them and influence their consciousness, preying upon their souls and disintegrating their essence. This is why, over time, one observes such as Christians becoming more pasty in their complexion, their skin tone reflecting the loss of the energy which is their soul. These witless slaves of Zion are gradually drained of their life force over time and are then consumed, having lived their lives in the lower state of vibrational frequency, in a condition of fear and concern over their fate. They have made of themselves ZOMBIESELS, a life lived in self-exalted egotism, their gaze to public view cast toward heaven but in reality simply toward the mirrored ceiling of the shopping malls of their consumer lifestyles, reveling in their vanity as the self-righteous and those with false humility, the spiritual, all else being worldly and fit for the pit according to their misrepresentation based upon their misunderstanding of reality. These infrahumans posit themselves as superior mortals and are in a state of perpetual condemnation of others, mote pickers of the relatively sane and pure, ignoring in willful ignorance the beams jutting from their own eyes which they file into sharpened stakes and ram into the hearts of those they deem sinners, slaking their thirst of the blood of their enemies, those not self, the other. The truly profane and mundane are they who have attached themselves to worldliness and made of it their focal point of attention, directing all of their energies toward accumulation of property, money and outward signs of social capital, all to gratify their egotistical propensity to pull in more attention to augment their own life force and posit their lower self within the confines of the matrix prison over their true self outside of these walls. Thus values become inverted and the temporal and perishable things of this world are transposed in the hierarchy of ends with the eternal verities and true treasures in heaven, and thus spiritual bankruptcy is the inevitable outcome in spite of all of the wealth of the world. The lifestyles of the rich and infamous are replicated and mimicked by the lower levels of society who, in their egotistical desire for attention and self-exalting vanity, emulate their socio-economic betters, reducing themselves to the level of their heroes, or at least obstructing their own potentiality to be something beyond this space-born state of existence. Thus all become celebrity superstars in their mind, though all are in reality transforming themselves into a dark star burning out and becoming a living dead thing. Some few managed,